Say again?
I thought Bones' plans for our first night in New Orleans might involve either investigating ghoul activity or something more romantic. Instead, I looked at the swirling waters of the Mississippi River, several stories below me. The bridge I stood atop of, under construction and therefore empty of commuters, swayed slightly in the breeze. Or maybe that was just a result of me clutching the beam next to me too hard. Bones stood at the bottom of the bridge after dropping me off with only one word of explanation.
I must have misheard you.
Jump!
No, I hadn't misheard him.
Is this some sort of joke?
No, kitten. Come on.
If this is your way of saying you want a divorce...
You couldn't drown if you tried. You haven't breathed for necessity in almost a year. Now quit dithering and jump. It's the best way for you to learn how to fly.
Sounds like a really good way for me to learn how to fall while screaming.
Ghouls can't fly, which gives vampires who can a large advantage.
He grabbed two of the metal support beams under my section and rattled them. The subsequent vibrations were so strong that my grip on the beam next to me increased, holding on for dear afterlife.
Damn you, you know I don't like heights.
I want you to be able to fly before we meet Marie tomorrow night, just in case we need to make a quick escape.
Bones.
You've flown twice before, which means you have the ability. You just need to sharpen it.
I didn't fly. I just jumped very high. I don't even know how I did it.
Your instincts kicked in under duress. Falling from this height should make you experience similar duress, allowing those instincts to take over again. Come on, kitten. Jump. Or I'll throw you off.
You throw me off this bridge, Bones, and you'll have a lot of celibacy in your future.
That only means I'd have to work harder to change your mind, and you know how I love my work.
It's not fair how calm you are.
I'm not worried, kitten. Now quit stalling. If you're still up here in 5 minutes, I'm throwing you off.
And if I know you, you've already started the countdown.
I slowly uncurled my death grip from the beam. While common sense said he was right about his reasons for me learning to fly, plus, true, jumping couldn't kill me even if I belly flopped into the Mississippi, I still cursed him as I edged away from the beam.
Sneaky, manipulating, merciless bloodsucker.
Pillow talk already? You'll have me hard before we're even back to our room.
Well, I hope your hard self enjoys flogging the bishop tonight.
Really, love? I'm impressed. Wherever did you learn such a salty expression?
From Spade. He was helping Denise brush up on her English slang.
Ah, of course.
I was a few feet away from the beam I'd held onto, nothing nearby to grasp anymore. And only my balance was keeping me from tumbling into the dark waters below.
Jeez, it really is a long way down.
Only 3 minutes left now, kitten.
I looked out at the city lights, winking across the other side of the bridge, trying to steady my nerves. Even in the dark, I could see the buildings lining the water clearly. Every now and then, spectral forms caught my eye, ghosts seamlessly moving in and out of them and other structures as they went about their phantomy business. New Orleans truly was one of the most haunted places in the world, with more sentient ghosts than anywhere else I'd ever seen. Hell, this was where we'd adopted Fabian.
Final minute, love. No more stalling.
Bastard.
I took a deep breath for courage and sprang off the bridge as if it were a diving board. Instantly, my eyes watered with the sting of air whipping at them. Even though I knew this wouldn't kill me, a rush of panic still filled me. Almost madly, I began to windmill my arms, as if by doing that they'd suddenly sprout feathers and wing me away. And I wasn't flying. I was falling like a dropped brick.
This strategy of yours isn't working, Bones! God, I'll hit that water any moment.
My whole body braced for impact, when distance abruptly began to grow between me and the river. For a split second, I thought Bones had caught me, deciding at the last moment not to let me crash into the water after all. But just as quickly, I realized I didn't feel the pressure of his arms. No, I felt nothing but the oddest sensation of air cushioning me, like invisible jets had magically appeared to propel me upward. I was now dozens of feet above the river, moving upward with every passing moment. Nothing supporting me except those pulsating currents of air.
Holy shit! I'm doing it! I'm actually flying!
It was far, far superior to the occasional dreams I'd had, where I could soar without explanation or practice. The air continued to feel different too, like it had form that I could mold and manipulate. No longer empty space, but a canvas of opportunities and exhilaration. I looked around, trying to spot where Bones was, when just as suddenly as I'd risen, I began to fall. My arms started doing that mad flapping again, but this time, nothing happened. A dull resignation filled me as I saw the distance disappear between me and the river.
Good thing Bones is my leather jacket.
The jolt went through my body like a roundhouse kick. The momentum plunged me several feet underwater. Bones's face was the first thing I saw when I resurfaced. He hovered a few feet above me like a beautiful apparition as I floated in the less than aromatic river.
Told you jumping off that bridge would flare up your instincts enough to fly.
Yeah, but I'm still in the water, so it didn't work as well as you thought it would.
Never said it wouldn't take practice before you learned how to keep from crashing.
I lunged for him, determined to plunge him into the water with me. But he neatly avoided my grab. Then he hauled me out of the river by my shoulders. An expertly controlled glide later, and we were back on top of the bridge.
Show off.
All right. Again.
I glanced down at the river, and then back at Bones.
I'd forgotten how much you used to enjoy giving me a hard time in training.
Necessity might have prompted him to insist on this extreme form of flying lesson, but his smirk said he was getting a kick out of seeing me splat into the river while I struggled to find my vampiric wings. I noticed he was far enough away to avoid any other attempts I might make at grabbing him.
Before we're done tonight, you're taking a dip in that water with me.
Be harder to stress you into flying now that you've already jumped once.
Take every cheap shot, every low blow, right?
Might have to throw you off to get your blood up enough this time.
Don't even think about it.
That a dare, kitten?
He was somehow on the other side of me, with a lightning quickness that left me no defense. And then I was tumbling end over end toward the river.
God damn it, Bones! I'm gonna get you for this! You just wait until I get my hands on you!
Sticks and stones, love!
Then I smashed into the river, cutting off more of my furious rampage. I came up to see Bones hovering over me again.
You look like a drowned rat. Perhaps you should try less flapping and more concentrating next time.
You are so going to pay.
If you want your revenge, come and get it.
Bones continued to fly in tight circles above me, flying just out of my reach as I continued to swim toward him.
You want to play games, huh?
Like I said before, you have the ability. You just need to sharpen it.
Oh, I'll sharpen it. Right now.
Maybe I'd forgotten how much he enjoyed being a hard ass in training, but he'd obviously forgotten that I was a fast learner. I channeled all my plans for paybacks into picturing the air above me as a ladder I could climb, if I could make it solid in my mind.
Remember how the air felt before. It's not empty space. It's something you can shape and mold. You just concentrate hard enough.
How are you enjoying your evening bath, kitten?
Energy began to push against my skin, building until it thrummed with the same steadiness that my heartbeat once pulsed inside me.
It must not be true that cats don't like water.
When I felt the air above me pulsating in time to the energy in my body, I vaulted straight up out of the water and barreled after Bones. Even though he yanked himself backward at the last second, that exultant feeling returned, like a shock of adrenaline to my system, as I felt the air bend to my will, allowing me the momentum and support to catch him with an aerial tackle that flipped both of us around. And then I tightened my grip and tumbled us into the river. After my flying lesson, Bones dropped us down in a graceful landing on the outside courtyard of our hotel suite. After several hours of practicing, I probably could have managed to land myself, but I might have taken out some of the wrought iron furniture in the process. Now I know why you chose a room located all by itself on the roof.
That comes in right handy now. We'd give any snooty hotel patrons a heart attack if we came through the lobby.
Bones gave a meaningful glance at our wet clothes, dripping hair, and his ripped pants and shirt, casualties of my midair grab on him before.
Told you I'd get you back.
Dare I hope that vengeance was sufficient enough to make you forget your other vow of retribution?
And let you go back on your promise to work hard to change my mind? That wouldn't be smart of me, would it?
No, not smart at all.
My hands trailed over his chest as he leaned down, his breath landing on exactly the right spot near my ear. Even wet and smelling like a stinky river, Bones still managed to entice me. Maybe because being waterlogged meant his pants and shirt clung to his body like they'd been molded onto him. Just a short distance away from us was a bedroom. That's where we needed to be, and the sooner, the better.
Hope the room card didn't fall out. Ah, thank God for button pockets.
But when I pressed the card to the slot, nothing happened. I did it again, double-checking that the arrow was in the right position. It was. But still, no green light.
Try yours.
But several tries later, the door still didn't open.
Getting them wet must have shorted the magnetic strip. Wait here. I'll go back through the lobby and get new cards.
Dressed like that?
Your clothes are just as wet as mine.
I should let you, just because I'll crack up imagining the looks on people's faces. But I'll go. At least my clothes aren't ripped half off. And my jacket's dry.
I don't care what any of those toffs think.
Come on. Have mercy on any older women who might be in the lobby. You don't want to give them heart attacks if they catch a glimpse of your goods.
I trailed my fingers down the front of his torn pants. His hand closed around mine, bringing it flush up against the goods in question. That almost ended my control right there. It was all I could do not to drop to my knees and replace my hand with my mouth. His eyes were bright green, matching the hunger in his expression, fangs tantalizing me from underneath those perfectly sculpted lips.
I won't be long.
Hurry.
I jumped off the roof without even looking to make sure someone wasn't below me until I'd almost reached the ground. Good thing it was almost 4 in the morning. Late even for most of this city's residents to be out and about. When I entered the lobby, I pretended not to notice the surprised looks the employees gave my wet hair and shoes. Next to me, a man was checking in, holding a sleeping little girl in one arm while awkwardly signing his forms with the other.
Thanks for holding the room. It was just one delayed flight after another.
No problem, sir. You have a good night.
Thanks. Hopefully I can put her to bed before she wakes up.
Hi. My key card is somehow not working.
I pulled out my driver's license. Fake, but registered to the same last name Bones booked this room under.
I can take care of that for you, ma'am. Here you go, ma'am. Have a wonderful night.
Thanks.
I stepped into the elevator with the weary man who had just checked in. He blinked a little at the drips of water that pooled at my feet, but said nothing. At least he didn't give me the same kind of stink eye that the fur-wearing, plumber-banging older woman had.
Tripped and fell in a big puddle.
Ah.
We'd gone up about 10 floors, when all of a sudden, the elevator shuddered like we were caught in an earthquake. The man staggered, and I grabbed him so he wouldn't accidentally drop the little girl.
What was that? It sounded like a boulder dropped on us.
Except boulders didn't drop from nice hotels onto elevators. And they also didn't make ominous growling noises. Supernatural energy filled the air, coming from the top of the elevator.
Oh, shit.
The first cable snapped.
Get in the corner!
I shoved the man.
What's going on?
The elevator shuddered again.
Sounds like another cable got ripped away.
Pounding began on the roof of the car.
Oh, God! What is that?
I plunged my hands into the seam in the elevator doors, hard enough to bloody my fingers, before shoving them apart. A slab of concrete and steel met my vision. No open spaces to escape through. The elevator was suspended between floors. But not for long, judging from the latest snap. Metal, plaster, and glass rained down on us as a hole appeared in the roof. A ghoul's face came into view, a savage smile lighting his features as he spotted me.
Reaper.
Get down!
The man crouched in the corner as the ghoul lunged for me. I tried to fight him off while standing under the hole he'd torn open. If the ghoul got inside, both father and daughter would be dead in seconds. And that's only if they were lucky enough for the elevator not to drop before then. Pain slashed across my arms and face, red immediately coloring my gaze. The ghoul had a knife. A silver knife, I realized, judging from the burn it left on my skin. I tried to avoid that flashing blade while still keeping the ghoul from dropping into the elevator. The car dropped a few feet before the last brake kicked in, but one good thing had come out of the elevator's fall. Now, shiny steel doors took up part of the concrete and metal wall. The car had dropped halfway to the opening of a new floor.
Pull those doors open and get out now!
But the man still crouched in the same spot as before, clutching his daughter while gaping up at us.
Damn it, he's in shock.
It wouldn't be long before either the ghoul got into the elevator, or the strain of two supernaturals fighting proved too much for the last emergency brake. I braced my arms on the support railings lining the car, flipped upside down, and kicked the ghoul with everything I had. The railings broke, landing me on my ass with enough force to make the elevator shake dangerously again. But for the moment, the ghoul was gone from the hole in the roof. I wrenched the doors open, yanked the little girl from her father's arms, and shoved her through. She landed on the adjoining floor below. She might be bruised, but she was now also safe. Before I could shove her father through, however, the ghoul jumped through the hole in the roof. The elevator shook hard enough that I felt sure it would drop. I ran headlong into the ghoul, knocking him away from the man. The ghoul and I crashed around the elevator, locked in a death struggle. If I wasn't worried about keeping the ghoul away from the huddled man, I could have gone for my weapons. But one careless stomp or swipe from the flesh eater would snap the man's neck like a twig. Then came a split second of dizzying relief.
Come here, you bloody bastards!
Bones was here. So the father and I would make it out of this. But my relief vanished in the next instant. The elevator was falling.
Oh, Jesus.
The velocity lifted us up a few inches before gravity had our feet back on the floor. The ghoul and I could survive the crash, though no doubt the ghoul would try his damnedest to make sure my survival didn't last much beyond that. The father, however, would be dead in moments. The ghoul lunged at me with a hate-filled grin, ripping his silver knife through the air toward my heart. I didn't raise my arms to block him, but moved to the left at the last second. That blade buried into my chest, spearing through my flesh with flames of anguish, but not piercing my heart. At the same time, I shoved the ghoul down into the side, aiming for the flashes of light that appeared between the partially open elevator doors as we fell. The rapidly passing floors and tight space acted as a crude guillotine, and the ghoul's body went limp. I didn't waste a moment to savor my victory, but pulled the knife out of my chest and grabbed the man, tucking as much of his head into my bloody torso as I could. Then, still bent over him, I vaulted upward with all my strength. White-hot agony sliced through my body. Dust, glass, and blood filled my gaze, making it almost impossible for me to see. Up was my primary thought, followed closely by, don't let him go. Those bone-crunching jolts could be more ghouls trying to kill me, or parts of the elevator shaft I crashed into as I blindly propelled us up. I blinked furiously, trying to clear my gaze while keeping my grip on the man.
Kitten?
I'm okay!
I couldn't see Bones, but it sounded like he was fighting. Last thing he needed was to be distracted, wondering if I'd bought the farm in the crash. Then shadows became solid objects as my gaze cleared with Nosferatu quickness. Red still colored my vision, but I didn't need to see in more colors to know that I'd gotten us out of the elevator with probably only a second to spare. I looked for anywhere safe to set the man. There, a small lip between the floors, marking where the elevator would stop. If it weren't in pieces below, I grabbed it, dangling both of us a couple stories above the wreckage of the elevator. The man's body was limp, but his heart still beat, thankfully. I swung a leg up, wedging my foot between the split in the doors. Then I kicked out, pushing those steel walls open. Then I swung the man up, gently pushing his prone form through the opening. No one was around, but it wouldn't be long until someone found him. Being propelled through the top of the elevator left broken bones and slashes all over him, even with my body taking the brunt of the abuse. But he was alive, and so was his little girl. That was the best I could do for them. My back still flamed as it healed, but at least I could straighten now. Even if it did feel like I'd just had my spine readjusted with a bulldozer. Then I stood on tippy toes and forced the doors close again. Now that I didn't have the man to protect, and my injuries had finished healing, I could move swiftly, but I didn't want to try flying again yet. I might be healed, but I felt weaker from using my body to make an elevator escape hatch for two people. And I still hadn't mastered the art of not crashing when I flew. If I barreled into Bones while he was in the midst of a fight, that could have awful consequences. I leapt from the narrow ledge to the remains of the dangling elevator cable and climbed. I didn't call out to Bones again, not wanting to alert my presence to any more ghouls. Seething deadly purpose washed over my subconscious, mixed with flashes of pain, followed closely by exhilaration. Whatever was going on, Bones was winning, because I felt no fear emanating from him.
Where do you think you're going?
Then a body sailed at me from above, outdistancing its detached head by about a dozen feet. I swung to the left to avoid it hitting me.
Kitten?
I'm almost there!
I doubled my efforts, reaching the top level less than a minute later. I heaved myself through the man-shaped hole in the wall that had bloodstains around it, probably made by the headless ghoul right before his free fall through the shaft. Bones's clothes were even more ripped than the last time I'd seen him. He was on his knees, restraining a ghoul underneath him. The ghoul kicked out in a macabre parody of passion.
Do you two need a few minutes alone?
Oh, we'll have time alone very soon. Won't we, mate?
Less than 30 minutes later, Bones and I flew toward a two-story house that was located about a mile off the main road, bordering a dense swamp. Frankly, I didn't know how Bones found the place, but he never hesitated in his direction. Half a dozen people stood in guard formation outside the house, looking up at us as we drew closer. Bones didn't bother with his usual graceful landing. The guards formed a loose circle around us, their weapons drawn, but not firing. Clearly waiting for instructions. That came in the form of a lean, bearded vampire striding out the front door. Blue flame swirled up his arms, somehow not singeing a stitch of his clothes. A sardonic smile corked his mouth as Vlad Tepes took in Bones' partially clad state, the grip he had around the ghoul's throat, and my own bloodstained clothes.
Bones, cat, how nice of you to drop in.
Tepes, this sword has answers I require.
Bones flung the ghoul face first onto the concrete drive.
We got jumped by ghouls at our hotel.
And he's the last one left alive.
They attacked you inside the city? Marie didn't go back on her word of safe passage, did she?
That's my first question. Did the Queen of New Orleans send you?
Fuck you!
Why did you have to say that? Now things are going to get really unpleasant.
Do you want to do this the bloody way or the fast one?
Can't say I care how I get my answers, as long as I do.
Hold him, but not too close.
Bones grasped the ghoul's arm in a grip that steel wouldn't break. Vlad ruffled the ghoul's hair, almost a friendly gesture, then walked to my side. Flames began licking up the ghoul's legs, blackening his clothes and skin. I'd been burned before, and it hurt worse than even being stabbed with silver. I also shivered at the memory of having that power, after drinking Vlad's blood. It had been tantalizing and terrifying. To suddenly have all your anger flow out of you in streams of fire had been as overwhelming to my senses as my newfound ability to fly. Trouble was, just like all the powers I borrowed, I couldn't control it. I might have blown Gregor to fiery smithereens, but I'd also set Bones on fire by accident.
Feeling more talkative now? You continue to stay silent, and I'll cook your frank and beans next.
The ghoul yanked away from Bones in a frantic attempt to get away. But as I suspected, Bones' grip didn't even budge. What did surprise me was the ghoul yanking so hard that more than his shirt ripped. Bones didn't share any of my qualms about suddenly holding an arm that wasn't attached to a body. He just grabbed the ghoul's other arm and began thumping him over the head with the loose limb while keeping away from the flames.
I've heard Bones threaten to beat someone with their own limb before, but I always assumed that was a figure of speech.
Apparently not.
Did Marie send you?
Majestic knows nothing of this.
There go the Franken beans. Vlad, he's being cooperative now. Ease up on the flaming.
You call that cooperative? I call it barely getting its attention.
Vlad?
Spoil sport.
The fire ebbed on the ghoul's lower body as it disappeared from Vlad's hands. The ghoul looked no older than me in human years. But to be strong enough to keep from babbling out his name, rank, and serial number this long, he had to be old.
You make me burn you again, and I'll forget that I care about her opinion.
Marie didn't send you off to Kat.
Majestic did not know our intent.
It'll be dawn soon. If I'm not in bed with my wife by then, because I'm still dealing with your worthless arse, I'll be in a very foul mood. So you'd best reconsider lying to me, else I'll send her inside and do things to you that you'll be too horrified to want to live through.
Majestic did not know. We plan to leave the city afterward, to avoid her wrath for striking a guest without her permission.
Oh, she'll be right brassed off at you if you're telling the truth. If you're not doing her bidding, who sent you?
We sent ourselves.
Kitten, go inside.
Now wait a minute.
It's true! We cannot allow Apollyon to incite our species to war.
What? I'd assumed that if Marie hadn't sent him, he must be one of Apollyon's ghouls. But it didn't sound like he was a fan. Bones traced his fingers almost delicately over the ghoul's regenerating skin.
Who's we?
Those like me, who know Apollyon seeks war for his own gain, not for any benefit to the ghouls.
Go on.
Apollyon was denied his coup centuries ago, when the other half-breed was killed. So now he forbids his supporters from harming the Reaper.
No wonder the ghouls avoided us in Ohio.
You were the safest vampires in this state.
I'd assumed Apollyon wanted me dead. Silly me should have realized that didn't fit into his grand scheme.
If we're to stop Apollyon before his madness infects too many of my people, the Reaper must die.
Bones crashed the ghoul's skull into the driveway hard enough for a hunk of it to fly off, like a grisly mini frisbee. Vlad didn't appear concerned with the damage inflicted on the driveway, but I made a mental note to cut him a check.
Why is Apollyon so convinced ghouls would win in a war against vampires?
Ghouls are harder to kill, with vampires' fragility to silver. But most importantly, since Majestic's sire is dead, she no longer has loyalty to the vampire world. Should the ghoul nation go to war, she will now side with her people instead of vampires.
Your brains must not have fully regenerated if you think one ghoul alone can win the war.
I don't know if Majestic's aid can cause us to win, but Apollyon believes it can. But my brethren believe both sides would suffer unimaginable losses if we warred. And after that, how could anyone be considered a winner?
So in your own twisted way, you're trying to save lives.
A part of me empathized with the ghoul. He wasn't blindly driven by a lust for power, like Apollyon. He understood what a lot of people didn't, that if you had to nearly destroy everyone on both sides to win a war, then it wasn't a victory.
Aside from your dead mates back at the hotel, how many others make up this vigilante group of yours?
We were assigned to small groups, never knowing anyone outside our immediate division, so that if one of us were captured, we couldn't betray our brothers.
Great. Someone smart masterminded this. Maybe I should add shopping for tombstones to my to-do list.
How did you know where we were?
We heard you were meeting with Majestic. We watched the airport, the docks, train station, and bridges. We followed you to the hotel when you rode in. Without your helmets, you were recognizable, even if she was not.
Told you helmets were safer.
Right then. If you've nothing else useful to tell me...
Let him go, Bones.
You're putting me on, kitten.
No. Killing him isn't going to help anything. While I'd be glad if I never saw him again, in his own way, he was just trying to protect his people.
I gave the ghoul a measured look.
We don't want war either. That's why we're going to stop Apollyon before things get to that point. But we'll do it without offering up my head. Maybe you can find those other groups and tell them we're on the same side.
Move and you're dead, mate. Look, love, you can sympathize with the plonker's motivations all you want, but the fact remains...
I gaped at what was left of the ghoul. Nothing but a smoldering mess left where his head had been. I turned to see Vlad examining his fingernails, as if his hands weren't still ablaze in the flames that had blasted the ghoul's head off.
What the hell was that?
Premature inflammulation. Happens sometimes. Very embarrassing. I don't like to talk about it.
Bones bestowed the most approving look on Vlad he'd ever given him.
This is some sort of joke to you? We had a chance to maybe spread some goodwill among people who hate Apollyon as much as we do. You know, my enemy's enemy is my friend and all that. But no, you guys think a barbecue is a better way to go about it.
If you'd let him free, Cat, he wouldn't have told stories praising your generosity. He would have gone back to his zealot friends with the happy news that you're a sentimental fool, inciting them to redouble their efforts to kill you.
But...
Quit applying human rules to undead power plays, Cat. You won't like the results.
Damn it, why does it always have to come down to taking the bloodiest road?
It won't always be this way, kitten. You're still very new to this world. But once swords like Apollyon see they can't break you, they'll move on to easier game.
I'm rarely challenged anymore, even though I have my fair share of enemies. When you respond harshly enough the first few times, it makes other adversaries less eager to test your mettle later.
Oh, how many enemies do I have to kill before the rest of them decide it's not worth it to take me on?
I don't know.
And what sort of person will I be by the time I reach that point? Will I even recognize myself anymore?
Kitten, do you think me an evil man?
Of course not. You're the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yet you know I'm a killer.
Yes, but that's not what I see when I look at you. That's the smallest part of you in my eyes. I'm not half as honorable as you are.
Oh.
You taught me how to accept myself when no one else wanted me to. You loved me without any of the fears or conditions that I first put on our relationship.
For some reason, I feel the urge to watch Hitman, followed by Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I ignored that, concentrating on the dark brown eyes boring into mine.
You've risked death several times for my life, my mother's, my friends, and countless other people you've never even met. And all of that's just been in the past decade. I'll probably never know all the things you've done for others in the time before you met me, or before I was even born.
So if you believe I'm a good man,
despite being a killer, then you know you can still be a good person. Even though sometimes circumstances will require you to act harsher than you'd prefer.
As long as you're with me, I can handle it. I can handle anything with you.
I'll always be with you, kitten. Always.
Where is a tissue when I need one?
If you're not too busy watching Hitman, I hear Dracula 2000 is a good movie.
Vicious. Make sure you hold on to that ruthless attitude until Apollyon's been defeated, Catherine.
If it's not too much trouble, Tepish, we could use some new clothes, blood, and a place to sleep.
I only arrived yesterday, so this house doesn't have much. But it does have all of those things.
Just in case more of this ghoul's mates are hanging about, I don't fancy returning to New Orleans until it's time to meet with Marie. Where is Jacques? He should have been here 10 minutes ago.
Bones, I doubt we'll be attacked by any ghouls so close to Marie's vault. Bones and I stood outside St. Louis Cemetery No. 1, waiting for our meeting with Marie Laveau. The gates were locked. A warning to visitors that no one but the dead, or wannabe dead, should be inside the graveyard's walls at night. Inside, spectral forms twined around the whitewashed crypts. Seeing them makes me miss Fabian.
Who knew you'd get so attached to a ghost?
Just because Fabian's transparent doesn't mean he's not also a great friend. Most of the ghosts in the cemetery weren't sentient like he was. They were just shades of their former selves. No thought, no feelings. Just repeating the same actions over and over, like a snapshot on a Mobius strip. Occasionally, I saw that some clearly had all their ectoplasmic marbles like Fabian did. They gave us looks ranging from curious to disdainful. I also miss Helsing. Poor Cat's gonna hate me for disappearing on him again.
He'll be fine with Ed and Scratch.
They didn't have to do that. I was gonna leave him in a nice pet resort.
They insisted. They said it was the least they could do.
I think they're just trying to prove their loyalty to their new master.
Besides, it would be animal cruelty to try and tote him with us. Especially considering what happened at the hotel.
Oh, Tate arranged to have the ghoul's body shipped to him instead of the local morgue. Nothing made cops ask a lot of questions, like having corpses that were decades, or even centuries old, turn up at a crime scene. Tate handled everything with perfect competence. But speaking to him instead of Don about crime scene containment was just another reminder of how serious my uncle's condition was. Villains had nothing on the stress my relatives could cause me. Jacques rounded the corner, looking almost taken aback to see us waiting by the gates. Bones cast a pointed look at the clock on his phone.
Jacques, didn't interrupt you from having a bit of fun, did we?
Majestic did not know you returned to the city. She assumed your absence meant you canceled your meeting tonight.
We just arrived a few minutes ago.
Not by plane, boat, train, or automobile either. Not after that ghoul told us his cronies were watching all of those venues. Bones flew us in, landing on the roof of St. Louis Cathedral in Jackson Square, before we hopped down and walked the couple blocks to the cemetery. He hadn't wanted me to try my wings again for this jaunt into the city. Something about conserving my energy for later. Under other circumstances, I'd think he meant that in a naughty way. But I knew he was referring to possibly fighting for our lives later, if things went awry.
I will notify Majesty.
Why'd he even come by if he didn't think we'd be here?
Because Marie would make sure nothing was left to chance.
That sounds like her.
She will be here in 20 minutes.
I should think so, after the trouble we've gone through to speak with her.
Jacques didn't reply to that. He hadn't been much of a talker the last time I'd met him either. It figured that I'd be seeing Marie again under the same circumstances that we'd first met. Me trying to find out if she'd back an asshole in his claims against me. This time, however, the stakes were much higher than determining who I was married to according to vampire law. After waiting the stated amount of time, Jacques opened the gates to the cemetery and I followed him in. The ghoul started to close the gate after me, but Bones' hand shot out to stop him.
I'm going with her.
Majestic says she will meet with the Reaper first, and you afterward.
Perhaps you misheard me. I'm going with her. And if you think to stop me, I'll soon be decorating one of these gate spikes with your head.
Jacques was at least twice the width of Bones, and just as tall. But he couldn't match the power seething off Bones. It poured from him and fanned out to encompass the cemetery, making the sentient ghosts give him a more interested glance.
This way.
We picked our way around the crumbling crypts and refurbished tombs. All the residual energy from the ghosts made me feel like I walked through invisible cobwebs with every step. Melancholy hung in almost palpable waves, making me imagine that every crypt I passed, or foot of ground I trod upon, sighed in regret over a life never to be experienced again. The cemetery might not be large, but because of New Orleans's history of extremely high mortality rates in comparison to their burial space, each crypt housed the remains of dozens, if not hundreds, of residents, some of whom watched us as we passed. Jacques led us into the dark, brackish-smelling tunnel, under the white oblong crypt bearing Marie Laveau's name and date of supposed death. I'd seen what Marie had installed for a booby trap in this tunnel, and let's just say it involved enough blades to turn anyone trespassing into red-splattered coleslaw. At the end of that tunnel, and up a narrow flight of stairs, was Marie's small windowless room. It might be located in a nearby home, or we might possibly be inside one of the larger national crypts in the cemetery. I had no idea, and I was sure that was how Marie wanted it. Marie leaned back in a plush recliner, idly stroking the fabric. Part of me wondered where the secret door was in this room. That chair wasn't a permanent fixture, or it would be mildewed from the damp air. Not to mention, I didn't believe Marie would leave herself without an alternate means of escape.
Majestic.
Apparently, Marie remembered my comment that she was not what I expected, considering her fearsome voodoo reputation. On the floor, right next to her smart little heels, was a container of plastic-wrapped poultry. I didn't have to look at the label to guess what kind. Another example of the sly humor lurking underneath her whole Queen of the Damned demeanor. A headless chicken. Very cool.
It was the best I could do under short notice. Bones, did Jacques not relay my instructions for you to wait while I met with Catalone?
Majestic, I'm certain you heard of the incident at the Ritz yesterday.
Yes, I heard.
And I'm also certain you know the attack was aimed at her. So you'll forgive me if I'm overprotective of my wife's safety at present.
I can assume the bodies recovered from the hotel were those of your attackers?
All but one. We took him with us when we left.
Marie's lace shawl shifted as she leaned forward. Now we had her full attention.
Tell me you brought this person with you.
I'm sorry. He's dead now.
You killed him?
Vlad did. He didn't know all the details, which was partly true anyway. Marie didn't look pleased, and I didn't think it was because she'd wished a long, happy life on the ghoul. From her reputation, she was hell on anyone who violated her safe passage rules. In fact, if the ghoul were still alive, he might be grateful that Vlad spared him whatever Marie had in store.
I'll speak with Vlad about that later.
Mind if I sit? I gave the single empty chair across from her a glance. She waved a hand.
Please.
Bones?
I'll stand, kitten.
So far, things were going better than I expected. Marie hadn't pitched a fit about Bones being here, or the ghoul being dead. Maybe she thought Apollyon was as much of a threat as we did.
You may remain, Bones, but you will stay silent while I speak with Cat, or I will remove you.
My hopes plummeted with that single sentence. Bones folded his arms across his chest and leaned back against the wall, looking for all the world like he was completely relaxed. I couldn't feel his emotions. He'd locked them down tight upon entering the tunnel. So, how about them saints, huh?
The last time I saw you, Cat, you were still a half-breed. Tell me, How do you find being a full vampire?
It's great. I haven't missed getting my period. What's not to love, right?
You forgot to mention your ability to kill your first husband with a fireball.
I'd expected us to talk about Apollyon, not Gregor. Gregor was the vampire that had tried to claim me as his wife, so he could control my powers. But Marie had wanted him dead too, so I didn't anticipate recriminations from her for killing him. It happened because Gregor cheated in his duel with Bones.
Cheating? That doesn't surprise me.
The Guardian Council of Vampires cleared me of any wrongdoing.
Gregor's arrogance always was his Achilles heel. Like bringing you to Paris when you were 16. I told him to come here instead, that his hometown would be the first place anyone would look for him should his actions be discovered, but he didn't listen.
So, Gregor told you about his kidnapping plans for me back then? The flash of rage that skipped across my subconscious, before Bones recloaked his emotions, told me he was this close to losing it at this revelation.
Gregor told me many things. He trusted my loyalty to him as my only living sire. I don't betray those I've sworn loyalty to. This shouldn't surprise you. I told you last year that if Gregor's claims of marriage to you were proved, I'd back his side.
You also told me a neat story about how you murdered your husband when he pushed you too far.
Indeed.
Well, I'd say tricking me into marrying him as a teenager, killing our friend Rodney, forcibly changing my mother into a vampire, and trying to murder Bones by cheating in their duel, all fell under the too far category for me.
Underestimating you was Gregor's mistake. It won't be mine.
Too bad for Gregor, the vision he had of me when I was 16 didn't show the part about me using all those neat powers he wanted to kill him.
But no one can hide from death forever. Not even our kind. Death travels the world and passes through even the thickest walls we protect ourselves with.
Not to be rude, Majestic, but it sounds like you're telling me to watch my back with you.
When you truly understand what it means, you'll know how to defeat Apollyon.
Okay, I'll remember that. At last we're getting on topic.
If you don't, he'll win.
You could always just spell it out and save us all some time, instead of being all cool and cryptic with the advice.
I won't join your cause against Apollyon. Last year my sire could have ordered me to, but with Gregor dead, my loyalty is to my people alone.
Even at the expense of countless thousands dying? I would think you'd be smarter than to side with a senseless bigot.
It has nothing to do with bigotry. But Apollyon's reach has grown. If I openly oppose him, I will be seen as a betrayer of the ghouls. Even ghouls who disagree with Apollyon may side with him out of species loyalty. It will be civil war. And am I to believe the vampire nation will not swoop in to crush us while we are weak from infighting?
Oh, come on. Vampires have no dreams of subjugating ghouls. You know that's just a smokescreen Apollyon's using.
There are some among your race who would take advantage of ghouls just as ruthlessly as Apollyon is seeking to do with vampires. If you're not smart enough to heed my words and outwit him on your own, then you deserve to lose.
As Marie reached behind her chair, I was ready to spring for the knives in my boots. But all she did was pull out an empty wine glass and set it on the armrest of her chair. My tension began to ebb. Jacques had served us drinks last time I was here, even though for the life of me, I didn't know how he'd managed to procure a cold gin and tonic in this dank underground area. Marie flicked open a ring on her finger, revealing a tiny, sharp point. She sliced it across her wrist and held the wine glass underneath the cut. Then, she held out the half-full glass to me. All of a sudden, I felt like a mouse staring at a hungry owl.
Reaper, won't you have something to drink?
Oh, fuck no. It took every last bit of willpower to keep from bolting out of my chair. I prayed my heart didn't start beating out of sheer panic. If Marie knew about my feeding habits, who would have told her? And did that person somehow screw it up and report back that I drank ghoul blood instead of vampire? Play it cool. She could be bluffing. What an unusual offer, Marie. But you know I prefer gin and tonic.
Over a dozen years ago, Gregor told me of his vision about a young half-breed who would one day wield the power of pyrokinesis. After his sire Tinnok perished, only one vampire existed who could manifest fire and bend it to his will.
Vlad.
And as you know, Vlad Tepish was no ally of Gregor's. Gregor assumed you'd come into this power about a century after you'd been changed into a vampire.
And he intended to have me under his control long before that.
Yet you killed him using fire within a month of your turning.
Beginner's luck.
Then curiously, you weren't reported to use fire again, even when you were in dire circumstances.
Everyone knows that.
Then, a few months ago in Monaco, you were reported to have used telekinesis against a group of vampires. That's two incredible powers, all manifested less than a year after your changing. More beginner's luck.
I'm a lucky girl.